This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. Since the current U.S. Constitution was created in 1787, the basic framework of the document has remained largely unchanged. But that could change, emphasis on could.
A group of corporations and conservative legislators, known as ALEC or the American Legislative Exchange Council, is pushing for an Article 5 convention. The move, also known as a constitutional convention, could end in amending or completely changing the U.S. Constitution as we know it.
Currently, 28 states have called for an Article 5 convention, meaning only six more states are needed to hold one. Wisconsin has yet to join that campaign, but is a likely target for the conservative movement.
In the country's history, there's only been one constitutional convention when our current constitution was created, so it's a bit unclear how a modern convention could operate.
Peter Rofus is a professor of constitutional law at Marquette University Law School. He spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers about the historical context of the constitutional convention.
Of the two ways of changing the constitution formally, one way, the way that begins in Congress and ends with three-quarters of the states ratifying, has been the way that the national constitution has been changed exclusively.
Okay. What about 1787?
That is the convention at which the Articles of Confederation, the governing, we'll call it the Constitution of our first America, that's when folks gathered in Philadelphia to alter the Articles of Confederation and came up with the Constitution as we now come to understand it.
In the Constitutional Convention of 1787, what were they able to do? What were they able to change about the Constitution?
They actually came up with a new Constitution and eventually sent it off to be ratified by the 13 colonies. That is to say, there were a limited number of problems with the articles, but the framers were able to essentially draft a new constitution entirely.
So since that point, really the only way that we've changed the constitution is by creating these amendments that we've driven through our Congress.
Just to be clear, the only way that we have formally changed the constitution. Now, all sorts of other changes have happened, arguably through judicial interpretation, but that's why I wanted to make that clarification.
Okay. So informally, it has changed in other ways, but still no constitutional convention.
Correct.
Do we know what a constitutional convention would look like now? What has to happen in order for one to be convened today, tomorrow?
Two-thirds of the states have to call for it, that is to say, have to propose to Congress that it occur. That's another way of saying two-thirds of our state legislatures have to, traditionally by majority vote, say to Congress, please call a convention. There's widespread disagreement about whether they have to say to Congress, let's call a convention for precisely the same reason, for slightly different reasons. So there's lots of play in the joints and much to challenge legally and constitutionally. But all we know for certain is that two-thirds of the states have to decide through their legislatures to ask Congress to call one, and that by the text of the Constitution, Congress is essentially required to oblige.
So right now there is a push to convene, and they're getting pretty close. It seems like a lot is relatively unknown about what that would mean, what that would look like. In 1787, they had delegates who went to the convention. Do we know who our delegates would be now?
Absolutely not. Well, about the only thing we do know, or at least that we can speculate with reasonable accuracy about, is that each state would determine who has the privilege of representing that state.
So we wouldn't really know if they were legislators, if they were people from the local Democratic Party, the local Republican Party.
Correct.
I mean, once a constitutional convention is convened now, what's on the table? What are they allowed to change?
That question, or more precisely the answer to that question, is what folks, experts, have been squabbling about for some time. There is nothing that formally constrains the activities of the convention. So let us say that two-thirds of the states call for a convention devoted to considering a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution. We don't know for certain that the convention itself will be limited to that particular issue. We can speculate, but the truth of the matter is the convention may very well decide, if it ever comes to pass, to go beyond the narrow particular issue or set of issues that called it into being in the first place.
So once the Constitutional Convention is convened, it seems like they can do anything.
Well, let's remember that what the Constitutional Convention does is propose. That is all it's doing. It is proposing changes to the Constitution that in turn must be ratified by three-quarters of the states. That's asking a great deal. So in theory, yes, the convention can do almost anything, but what it does is non-binding unless and until three-quarters of the states sign on to this particular proposal to change the Constitution or that particular proposal to change the Constitution.
So here's a question. If a number of states agree to have a constitutional convention, are the other states who didn't necessarily sign on to it, are they also represented at this convention? The invite would be extended, as it were.
Right, right. Once two-thirds of the states request to Congress that a convention be called, and Congress calls it, all states are, if you will, invited to participate. Yes.
One thing that I saw in some literature is the different proposals must be sent to state legislators, or it can also be sent to, they can also be sent to a special state convention. Do we know what that looks like?
No, because it hasn't happened before. So presumably each state will have a fair amount of discretion in how it goes about determining for its own state whether it chooses to ratify or not. And that would leave some discretion to each state to determine who, what, how, and the like.
So it might not be state legislators that are actually ratifying, but rather a special convention of people.
It could be. And of course, what all this means and what we have not identified yet in this conversation is in our own society and culture, the potentially voluminous litigation that can result from what the framers intended to be the sort of the most fundamentally democratic with a small d way of changing the Constitution.
And I guess that's a question about just changes to the Constitution in general, because when we think about the ramifications, I mean, if things were really altered, what would that mean to our laws in general? So much of our nation's laws are based on the Constitution.
Well, yeah, but let's unpack that. Our Constitution began by legitimizing slavery. Slavery's in the Constitution. We amended the Constitution to do away with slavery. We amended the Constitution to, among other things, permit women to have an equal say in voting in federal elections. We had we amended the Constitution to allow 18-year-olds to vote in federal elections. So let's not sort of assume that changes to the Constitution that emerge from a convention are necessarily going to be unwise or regressive or somehow moving the nation in the wrong direction.
Oh, I don't mean to say that I think they would be regressive, but rather what could major alterations mean to our current laws?
Well, let's start with the basics. The Constitution trumps ordinary laws. And what that means is that to the extent a proposal from a convention emerges to change the Constitution, and that proposed change is ratified by three-quarters of the states, mere statutes, whether they be state or federal, that are inconsistent with that amendment, essentially become null and void. Again, just to take some of the starkest examples, we had a president who was elected four times. A chunk of the nation thought that would be unwise, and a chunk of Congress thought so too. So we now have a two-term limit on the American presidency. That change basically meant that, just like it sounds, we couldn't have an FDR again that would serve from, say, 1933 all the way through to 1945. And depending on what the nature of the change that comes out of the convention, whether it is a balanced budget amendment, which, although I'm not an economist, has substantial potential contributions across the board, we really don't know. It all depends on the substance of what the proposed amendment is and will be.
Okay. So something I've also seen brought up, in 1787, they changed the ratification process. I guess, could they do the same here?
Yeah, I too have seen some of what I believe you to be referring to. And this is sometimes mentioned as a significant concern of the Constitutional Convention. My hunch is, if you mean, let's begin with the proposition that the Constitution as it stands says three-quarters of the states have to ratify a proposed amendment, I doubt very much that a change to that is going to be deemed acceptable unless and until, of course, it's ratified by three-quarters of the states. So I have less concern about the convention changing the ratification process, because I suspect that's not going to go over well with the legal system as it exists right now.
Okay. So, I mean, what do you think ultimately we should know about a constitutional convention now that there are a number of states that are looking to have one?
Well, any question that begins what should we know is kind of a tricky question, because as a nation there's much that we don't know about our the most fundamentals of our government. But this issue has stayed below the radar over the last few years, even as we've approached the two-thirds of the number of states necessary to call a particular constitutional convention. I guess from my perspective as an educator, having my fellow citizens and the folks who live in this nation know that this is how our Constitution gets changed. This is one of the two methods, a method that has not yet been tried, but that intelligent, driven, forceful, and moneyed folks in our own society today would like to use. I think that's a useful thing to know. And the other thing is to keep an eye on it. But nothing dictates that the particular outcome will lean ideologically one way or the other. Although over the past few years and decades, most of the movement toward conventions that has been that have been most successful have been from what we deem the conservative side of the spectrum. And it's no accident that given the number of the majority of state houses that the GOP has captured over the past few years, that would be the case. That just makes sense.
Well, Peter Rofus, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Thank you for having me, Joy. I appreciate it.
Peter Rofus is a professor of constitutional law at Marquette University Law School. He spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers, and for more information, go to wuwm.com.